Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We're back here in Stilfontein, and as I said to you, you know, we can't quite leave the story until it actually comes to its end, and it's not there yet. Lawyers for Human Rights vowed to take the SAPS to court, and this obviously comes on the back of another court proceeding. We spoke about that yesterday. And so the Lawyers for Human Rights attorney is on the line with us, Mametlwe Sibeyi. Thank you so much, Mr. Sibeyi, for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and listeners of CAF and Matt.
Your concern at the moment, it seems to me, is the pace with which what seems to be what they're calling a rescue mission is taking place. Just maybe take us through exactly what it is that you're worried about.
Okay, let me just give you a bit of brief background. On Saturday last week, there was a community risk effort under supervision of the police. Part of that risk effort, it meant, you know, pulling down from the shaft, particularly those minors that are extremely weak that were facing an imminent, you know, death for various reasons, you know, because of lack of food, because of lack of medication, all of those cases of dire, I mean, those dire cases, right? Mm-hmm. And but also for those that a relief for them was delayed, they were at least being supplied with food, with water, and again also with medication to ensure that pending their rescue, that actually continue. Now, the police, after the application by the Society for Protection of Our Constitution, as the organization is called, there was application in court, and of course there was an interim order that was granted in favor of the applicant. Section 3 of that, you know, part 3.3 of that, or paragraph 3.3 of that order, actually, it provided that no non-emergency personnel may enter the shaft. Now, the police, quite outrageously, I must say, and I'll give you a reason why, they interpreted that to mean community rescue effort has now been interdicted. Now, I'm saying outrageously because, I mean, the applicant approached the court in order that they are able to facilitate the relief not to stop it. What that provision obviously meant to say was that no new person must be entering the shaft. There is no definition of emergency personnel to mean emergency personnel is only somebody employed in emergency service of government or a rescue team by a mining corporation. Emergency personnel in the context of the rescue effort could only ever have meant that people that are involved in the rescue effort, which in this case actually include members of community. So ever since that time, what is that the police have said? They've said that there's not going to be rescue, there's not going to be any additional food. Now, let's remember, the last time was those miners were supplied with food was 300 very tiny grams of instant, instant maize meal, right? Mm-hmm. And 506 bottles of small bottles of water. That's the last supply that I negotiated last week, Saturday, right? Now, you know, I get on very well with those police commissioners, you know, with the police people on the ground. And I can tell you, even when I'm there, we exchange bottles of water all day. It was extremely hot. Imagine saying somebody must survive with one small bottle of water from Saturday last week. That is a sufficient provision between then and now, right? That instant torch is all that will sustain them. Pending this professional risk team, which has been setting up, even now, nobody can tell you when they are going to commence with the actual rescue, not even the commander of the operation on the ground. That is a problem.
Okay. So how much information are you getting? Do you have any communication with the miners on the ground?
So, I mean, as I said to the police, we are going to have no choice but to approach the court in this instance. But as you would know, we want to use courts as a forums of last resort. And I said to them, we have had a good agreement and operation that was going on very well. I mean, all the stories that miners are not trapped, it's definitely the truth, right? As I think we have again and again demonstrated. And I'll tell you, because I've consulted with these miners that have come out and who supposedly are a proof that miners are not trapped. And I'll tell you the story, because I actually put them on record. I mean, I said to the police, if you convince me, as you have been telling people in this country, that these miners are not trapped, they can easily move from the shaft where the media is located, that is shaft 11, which is 1.8 kilometers of a hole underground, right? So nobody can jump 1.8 kilometers out of the hole without any staircase, which is what is lacking there, unlike other shafts, right? The only way that you can get out of the shaft is through being pulled through a rope for an hour without interruption by a group of about 40 men, you know, on the surface under supervision of the police as it was happening, right? And nobody, we never threw a rope under and that rope did not come back with a person. So people wanted to come out and quite disparately, right? Now, the police are saying they can always use other shafts now that they're not allowing what they call a non-emergency personnel anywhere near the shaft, which the court meant it to be a hole. They've now defined it to mean the entire area, right, next to the hole where would be the entrance point. Now, the miners that I spoke to, after me and the police agreed that not we go and speak to them, and you let us know if you think that any, you know, of these stories of yours are still valid. I'm going to share the videos of my recording in the media group where you get lots of briefing. But I've recorded the part that was supposed. These are miners that I interviewed in the office of the commander of the station, Estilfontein, to say, how did you move from shaft 11 to shaft 10 where you got out, right? Where is the staircase?
Mm-hmm.
Those miners are saying, the 12th one that came out, they are saying that they've been crawling underground from Monday last week. They came out Monday this week. So it took them 7 days. I have them on record in an interview under supervision of the police. And I'm going to supply it in a media group, right? 7 days crawling underground in narrow mine shafts that are flooded, right? And they say that there is no way a great majority of those miners who are extremely weak can actually be able to make it through such a treacherous route from one shaft to the other, which the police want you to convince that it's almost like a stroll on the park, like many people imagine when we say it's just walking from one shaft to the other where there's an exit, right? Many of those miners are dehydrated, are emaciated, and in extremely weak conditions because of hunger, because of thirst, but also because of chronic illness and, you know, failure to supply them with medication over a period of months, right? So that is the extra state, and we are going to have to go to court and say to court, part of the problem with the application, so I'm not surprised that the application that was that went to court actually failed. And there's a simple reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the applicant relied solely on the words of the minister in the presidency. They were shocked by the words of the minister. They rushed to court without engaging with the families, without engaging with the community, without engaging with the operation on the ground, which was a problem, because what actually happened is that, obviously, after Minister Javini said what he said, there was an uproar across the country. There was instant community protest on the ground. Solidarity sprang up from Makua, ourselves, the trade union movement expressed, you know, outrage over that. And the police were now forced to change and to accommodate the demand for rescue, but also for food and water supply. So at the time when the matter was being heard in court, on the basis of the applicant that have no engagement, no connection to the case. It meant that the facts that they were presenting were no longer true. They argued that there was no commentary issue. At that time, there was a commentary issue that was only stopped on the basis of the interim court order that was granted them. At the time, the miners were being supplied with food. So it was very easy for the police to show that actually those things are being supplied, and therefore the application is grounded on lack of facts. Right? That is what the court expressed itself on. And what we need to do is to approach the court on the basis of the concrete situation as of now, where there's no community risk, there is no supply of food, water, and medication that is of life-saving, and will also be able to demonstrate what the freedom of movement and exit that they are talking about actually entails. 7 days of crawling underground by people that are extremely weak and that cannot simply take that journey.
I want us to, you know, you are saying you are obviously engaging more with miners, those who've come up, and so on. What you know, they've told you about how long they've crawled, for instance, to get out. There are other reports as well that these are gangs underneath there, and there are other people who are controlling the movement of miners. What can you tell us about that?
So, as I said, the miners that I spoke to, the police, I mean, these are miners that were organized by the police, supposedly to tell me, to convince me that they it's very easy to actually get out. These miners told me that it took them 7 days. Right? They've been calling from Monday last week. They came out yesterday. Right? 7 days. Now, tell me if you think that is a serious proposition in this company. And they said many of the 500 miners that they left at the shop where the media is actually assembled, right? Many of them are simply not in a physical state to make that 7 days calling to the other shop.
Is it true?
Never mind the fact that there's no map.
What do you know about the police saying that others actually returned and went back into the shaft when they saw that the police were there? Did you verify that?
I mean, I couldn't, because when I asked the miners, again, I'm going to show a video evidence. In the present, this interview that you will see that I've conducted, in the office, right? In the office of the station commander, they are saying, no. Every of those mine workers that they've seen desperately want to come out. Even in those shafts, because you're talking about miners that are trapped in shafts across that whole area. This other group of miners that are from the shaft where there's a staircase, they also said people are 2 weeks there. And when I asked them, but why can't they use the staircase? They said, no, they are 2 weeks to be able to make it. We made it. It also took a long time for us to be able to make it, but it is the food that we got was very helpful. They are saying they got more of it, and it gave them enough time to be able to come back. That miner says that he saw 2 dead bodies, right, in a section where he was. People died. Now, think about it, Penelope. Do you honestly think people that can only be touched at most, but with trespassing, will allow themselves, you know, to die underground in that number? Now, let me come to the issue of criminals. There is obviously elements of organized crimes that are organized criminal syndicates. We are the ones. I researched a report on the state of the mine closure, where we lamented the fact that there is 6,100 mines that are abandoned by the mining corporations that are derelict and ownerless. And in the conditions of the abandonment of the miners, their families, their communities, many of them are forced by hunger and starvation to work in a form of artisanal mining in this. And without a proper regulation to take account of that reality, what we have is a development of gangsterism, is a development of organized criminal syndicates that have stepped into the vacuum, right, where there's a lack of state regulation to regulate the industry, but also to extort the minerals out of these artisanal miners. The same way that you have construction mafias extorting, you know, money out of the constructors and the tender, you know, other business people that are given government tenders and so on. So that's a problem. And this organized criminal syndicate, I would argue, they are actually working with sections of the corrupt police and, of course, the mining industry. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about it. This mine worker whose videos have been sharing, who can bend walk, who stay in shacks, the idea that they can be transporting, right, from Stilfontein, from Gauteng, all the way from Limpopo, billions worth of minerals to the port in a police type of a state like ours. And I'm using the word police state liberally. But we are living in a country where you can't drive 10 kilometers without encountering a police and a law enforcement agent, one or the other. Let's be clear about it. That they can be moving these minerals all the way from Limpopo to the port, because there's simply no market for minerals in this country. Even the official report of the mining industry shows that only less than 2 billion of 782 billion in primary sales of minerals, right? Less than 2 of them were sold in this country, and that is actually called ESCOM. All of these minerals leave the country, right? And it's the same as a mineral from the artisanal miners. So how are they making it to the port without involvement of the police? But more than that, how are they traded internationally without the license, when those licenses are actually only held by the big mining companies in this country? So it is very clear that there's collusion there. And these are the same organized criminal syndicates that are unleashing reign of terror on the artisanal miners, their families and their communities, with a complete impunity, because the police are involved. Elements of the political elite are involved, but so are the elements of the big mining cooperation. And it's in their interest that communities are terrorized into silence, not only the miners. And I agree, as we have pointed out, that even the rape, the murders, all of that is functional to the accumulation by violence and paid by extortion, and of course violence that is a method of the operandi against this artisanal miner.
Well, when
so
are
they
you...
are there,
yep.
They are there, those elements, but they must be separated. And I ask the police commander, do you want to kill hundreds of disparate, poor, vulnerable people in order to get to the handful of criminals? Is that your policy?
Is this a threat, or are you going to actually go to court?
Well, as I said, the police gave me access, right, to the miners, with a view that if they give me indication that there's no trapping underground, that they can easily move to those, it will be easy. I would not be approaching court and so on. So I consulted. I just arrived in Pretoria, as I'm speaking to you now, mm-hmm. actually, after those consultations. But my colleagues, I gave them the report that there is no way that we can simply agree to this. One other option that I've also given to the police mm-hmm. that they should consider is that we need to be co-opted into that task team that was appointed by the minister mm-hmm. to actually be part of the rescue effort, which involved the communities and others, so that we can resolve issues amicably there. But in the meantime, our colleagues are drafting papers, and if there is no indication tomorrow that we can amicably resolve these issues, of course we'll be able to make a definitive pronouncement about whether are we going to court. But we are actually working on the strategy as a fallback, because for us the court must be the forum of last resort if we can't resolve the issue at level of operational management of the risk effort.
Attorney at Lawyers for Human Rights, thank you so much for your time. Mametlo Sibe, we'll obviously wait to see how they react to that. I'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Apartheid X-Files.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.